listening to IDEA, the podcast about improving data engagement and advocacy. I'm Brianna Wham.
And I'm Shannon Sheridan. Welcome to the show.
In addition to data, research software, including source code, executables, etc., are major research outputs. Thus, researchers are increasingly needing to know about software management, quality, accessibility, and sustainability in support of open science efforts and research reproducibility. Yet, standard practices or principles are not always applied to software, and how researchers learn to manage software is often not formalized. Therefore, training and engagement on this topic is an important priority for researchers now.
In this episode, we'll be learning more about how Dan Rudman, Digital Scholarship Librarian at Leiden University, Stephanie Van de Sant, Open Science and Research Data Management Training Coordinator at the VU Amsterdam, Lena Karvaskaya, RDM and Open Science Community Manager at VU Amsterdam, and Marin Vermas, Research Software Engineer at VU Amsterdam, collaborated with others to create the Software Horror Escape Room, and how this game has successfully engaged researchers with the concepts of software management. So let's get started. Welcome, Stephanie, Dan, Lena, and Marin to IDEA. I'm going to kick us off with our first question and ask you all to describe a little bit more about your role and how it fits into the data ecosystem at your institutions.
Hey, my name is Stephanie. I work at the Free University of Amsterdam as a research data management and open science training coordinator, which fits very well into what Free University of Amsterdam actually once, since open science is highly valued and part of many policies that we have at the university. And so is that open science and research management is an essential part of a curriculum of every training at the university. And I'm glad that I can coordinate all these training activities and see if we can come up with new trainings around open science and research data management.
Hi, my name is Dan Rudman. I am a digital scholarship librarian at Leiden University in the library here. I was hired as part of a new initiative within the Center for Digital Scholarship to develop policies and practices around research software management. And this is very much contextualized within the larger data management program that's been developed here at Leiden University. We have a number of digital scholarship librarians who work in data management, and then a network of data stewards who collaborate with us on supporting our researchers in making their data more open and fair and understanding how to manage their data. And so my work, particularly, you know, with this project has been to find ways of engaging people and educating people about how to manage their software akin to how we manage our data, because that is while we've been developing software for a long time, that's a newer field of interest throughout the Netherlands and tied to data management as a whole.
My name is Lena. I work as a community manager for research data management and open science at the Free University of Amsterdam, same as Stephanie and Meron. And my role is to create this environment where both researchers and support staff can learn about these topics, research data management and open science, but also can learn from each other and about all the ongoing initiatives where they can actually benefit from each other's experience.
Hi all. So my name is Miron. I also work at the Free University Amsterdam, and I work as a coordinating research software engineer. My responsibilities overlap somewhat with what Dan is doing. So I also very much focus on research software management and also the support that we can give to get it in a more fair and reusable state for the whole university and for whole science. And we are approaching that from many, many angles. And one of them is what we're here to talk about, I think.
Yes, well, thank you for that great lead-in. So we're really excited to talk to you all today about the Software Horror Escape Room. And we know that this was a collaborative effort and that you're kind of representing it here today, but we're excited to learn from each of you kind of what exactly the Software Horror Escape Room is, what prompted you to create it, and what your process was for creating it.
I think it was 2019. I was still working in Utrecht University, and there was a meetup between like several institutions up to Delft, where somebody said, as Marta Teperek said, you know, we have this Love Your Data week around St. Valentine's. Isn't it cheesy? Don't we need like some counterpart? And then we kind of laughed that it would be nice to have a data horror week where like the all the things we were afraid of come. And in a way, this is actually when you, the only moment when you really see the benefit of good data management is when things go terribly wrong. This is where the value of data management becomes obvious. Since then, there were various attempts to celebrate the Data Horror Week around 31st of October, like around Halloween. And this is where the topic of horror came from. And when I started working at the FU, everything went online. And when I was thinking about a possible event, my colleague Lisa Rodenberg had this idea of an online escape room, which was done for other topics than data management. But we thought we could maybe copy it and make an exciting event out of it.
In that sense, the Software Horror Escape Room is a smaller training unit around software management that celebrates the creation of a software management plan, which was created by multiple organizations and institutions in the Netherlands. And Miron can say a bit more about the software management plan that was developed, but the Software Horror Escape Room is developed around this fact and also contains important elements of the software management plans that is important for researchers to consider. In that sense, even though a researcher has never heard of software management, the Software Horror Escape Room is meant to be a nice training resource in which researchers learn to be aware of software management and some pitfalls around software management in a fun and easy engaging way, so that it really is fun to learn about software management. And that still in the end, you have some questions or like you picked up some interesting facts around software management plans that you would like to continue learning about.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested because I know that's not something that's super common or maybe done at all here at some of our institutions. So please, I would love to hear more about them.
So indeed, recently, a software management template was presented by eScience Center. They were the lead in it, but there were many, many universities involved in creating it together. And like I said, it's a template. So since the management of software is not as straightforward, straightforward is not the right word, but there's many, many custom steps. There's not a one size fits all. So we wanted, or all the universities wanted to kind of have a quick jump into software management and have some help getting started. So there's steps like versioning your data that are recommended. There are steps like continuous integration, which would be great if you are very involved in software. So there are many, many topics that are introduced with kind of a level of importance depending on what you do. And then the universities can decide themselves which they pick and how they want to introduce that at their universities once they're ready to give the support to have researchers actually use it.
That's really helpful context. And I'm curious, could one of you describe what a researcher would experience as they kind of go through this software horror escape room?
I would suggest that Miron does this part because he did the major work of developing it.
All right, I will give it a go. But the storytelling and the creation of the puzzles in the escape room, everything was very, very collaborative. I was just the main lead in implementing it and kind of finalizing that the flow. But I'll give you a quick walkthrough. So you are a researcher and you are about to submit your paper to a wonderful journal called Frontiers in Hell, which is an excellent last minute choice, of course. But then it's, I think, 11, around 11 at night. You want to be early enough. And you submit, but then instead of everything going well, your screen starts shaking and a black cat comes out of the screen and tells you, wait a minute, you didn't do anything with the software. You didn't manage it in any way, and we can't accept your submission like this. So the rest of the escape room that follows is you have to go step by step. You can pick your own route, but you have to make sure all of the code and all of the things you have been working on is in tip-top shape. And if you don't, you will turn into a cat. So you have to be quick. You have 1 hour, and when the timer goes off, you will turn into a cat, which will be quite horrifying or comfortable, because living as a cat is quite nice as well, I think.
That's amazing. It sounds really entertaining and engaging for a researcher to actually learn something, but also have this kind of game that they're playing as they approach it. You also mentioned that you used open source tools to develop this software, a horror escape room. Can you briefly describe what tools you use so that if other folks are interested in doing something similar, they have kind of an approach to that?
Yeah, so we use an open source software called Twine. But again, since Miron is the main developer here, we all contributed our puzzles via GitHub, for example, and shared the team's development.
Yeah, we went over a few tools that might be good. And I think there might be better ones than Twine. But this is also a tool that's quite easy. So it's a combination of developing something fast, and also having enough flexibility and it looking nice to work with. So you can write a little bit in HTML in there. You can work with block structure, so you don't have to write all the code yourself. You can use jQuery or JavaScript to do more fancy or exciting stuff. So you can go as far as you want. And it's an open source tool. So we versioned each HTML file that in the end was compiled on GitHub. And that's where we host it as well. So anyone could look at it, import it into Twine Renderer and see what it looks like, and maybe adjust it if they think, I like this game, but I would like a slightly different version for my own university. But they could also just play it whichever they prefer.
And for us, it was very important that since we all come from different institutions and we still wanted to collaborate, that we have a place where we all can openly contribute and where everything is openly available to everyone. So GitHub was for us a nice solution since it was always open to everyone and it was very easy to see the process. And we had some version control in there, so there was no overlapping versions. So we were not in any struggle with collaborating together, even though we come from multiple institutions and we're working at different times of the project.
And of course, for our listeners, we will absolutely be linking to the escape room and to the GitHub repository in the show notes. So if you want to go check it out, maybe fork it and use it at your own institution, we'll make sure that you can find it there. And speaking of implementing it at your institutions or any institution, how have you found that gamifying training like this to teach research software management concepts has impacted researcher buy-in for software and data management itself?
I can start with this. Our approach is of course to be very welcoming and accessible to people. Research software, data in general, can sometimes be mystifying for researchers. You know, is what I'm doing developing software or is it data? I don't work with data. Oh, wait, I do. You know, there are a lot of moments in which the definitions of these terms are not readily apparent to people. And so by developing these kinds of resources, you know, people have the opportunity to approach the field in an enjoyable and welcoming way that is just less intimidating, I think. So when we recently played the game with our group of data stewards here at Leiden University. And, you know, the reaction is people are having fun. A lot of times we will do this, even though it's online, we'll all be together in the same physical space. And it's an opportunity for people to engage with each other and ask questions about different puzzles that they're all working on. And share their frustrations and funny things that they are reading and finding. So yeah, I think just that process of making this more social already in the, you know, couple months since this has been out, we've already seen, you know, people engage with it in a way that, you know, you don't necessarily see if we just had written a position paper or something like that.
For me, it was fantastic to see that the game speaks to so many different types of people. For example, we tested the software horror escape room with some master students at our university. And it was fantastic to see how they engaged with the riddles, and they were very eager to solve everything. And it's fantastic to see if you see one of the master students later at another occasion that way and enthusiastically wave to you and say, hey, hello, what happened to the software horror escape room? I still think about it. And how does it go? Is there a new game coming? So that's a nice way, because you really see that maybe they don't understand every aspect of the software horror escape room and software management behind it. However, they remember you and they remember the game very vividly, and they feel very enthusiastic about it, even though they just played a prototype. And on the other hand, we also invited some of our colleagues from software skills training, for example, from the Nordic countries, to our launch, and they were very enthusiastic too. And even though they know a lot about software management, maybe even more than we do, they were very enthusiastic and they asked lots of questions and they were very positive about it and they would like to share it and also hear more about it. So that proves for me that, you know, the game aspect of this training is actually very magic and speaks to a lot of people, no matter what your experience level is or how high you are in the hierarchy of the university. It's fun for everyone.
Yeah, maybe to add to this, there are like multiple ways of how you can play the escape room. You can just do it on your own. But what we encourage is to play it as teams. If we do this online, we put people into breakout rooms so that they can share a screen and play and go through the escape room together. And this gives people an opportunity to actually, you know, share the adventure, you know, the like actual team building going on. During COVID, we actually saw people using our escape room for team building.
I would like to add that I think it's a perfect way to at least have people become familiar with a lot of concepts that are crucial in software management in a very playful way. So at least they will know about all these different parts that you could include in your own research. You won't learn how to do it exactly yourself, but you suddenly now have a whole range of things that you could do and think about, and that might help you if you do.
If somebody thinks about developing a similar gamified training around research data management or open science, I can highly encourage that, because it does not only affect the players, but I also feel like it affected us as developers, because, you know, developing a game instead of a proper or like a traditional training was a lot more fun. And I feel like that was one of my favorite projects during that time. And I feel much closer to my collaborators and colleagues, yeah, almost friends now, because it was such a great fun to develop this game with all of you. And we had so many great ideas. And in the end, it was very hard because we only had to, you know, we should fulfill only 1 hour, and no researcher wants to be trapped in a game for like 2 or 3 hours, but we could have easily filled that time. And it was such a fantastic time. And yeah, you know, you learn to admire your colleagues and you really, it bonds you. So I can highly encourage to everyone to develop actually a game as a training.
So you mentioned that this is a collaborative effort and we're here talking to the four of you. How many people in total were on the team to develop the escape room?
So there were 3 institutions in this project, the Free University of Amsterdam, where most of us work, Leiden University, where Dan works, and the eScience Center. And the eScience Center is the knowledge hub for research software engineering in the Netherlands. So their contribution was really important. They also worked on the software management plan. So it all aligned very nicely and gave us, I think, the authority to talk about software horrors. And there was 8 people working on this game. Lieke de Boer and Carlos Martinez from the eScience Center, everyone present here. and two more colleagues from Free University of Amsterdam, Tycho Hofstra and Elisa Rodenberg.
Great. And then my other question, you know, you're talking about these great interactions between the researchers and their staff with this training. And I'm just curious, do you keep metrics of like how many people have taken this class and have gone through the escape room?
Well, actually, since it's so we are hosting the escape room on GitHub, you can see some statistics about the traffic, of course. GitHub gives you that, but it doesn't have very elaborate analytics. But it might be nice to do that or to implement some pixels to check who's coming from where and to learn about that. But actually, at the moment, that's maybe missing, seeing who is trying this game, because anyone can access it now. It's just out in the open. You just need to find it first, of course.
We also make sure that our game is citable in a fair manner. So we don't only host it on GitHub, but we also made sure that our GitHub project was reflected on a research data repository, Zenodo, which was our choice. So the Software Horror Escape Room has now a DOI, and hopefully we can track citations then. It was only launched end of October, so we cannot expect any citations yet, but maybe that will be an interesting way to see who actually uses our game, and maybe also see who reuses our Software Horror Escape Room and to what forms will it later reach. Zenodo also has some usage statistics, but still you cannot see from where the usage comes. It's just a small indication.
So if any of our listeners do end up using the system at their institution, get in touch, let our guests know.
And cite it. So we've talked a little bit here about how other institutions or other folks working with researchers could either directly use the Software Horror Escape Room or use kind of the model that's implemented in kind of your GitHub code to implement something similar, and how that's been successfully done, right, from that data horror escape room to this software horror escape room. What factors do you see as vital for success in implementing these types of gamified trainings? I know you talked a little bit about how you actually try and have folks do it in teams, both virtually or in person, things like that. Is there anything else that you see as vital for success, either working directly with the researchers or through that development process?
Maybe what was helpful is that we developed it in a modular way. So we have one game, so we have one storyline. The storyline is, of course, important for the engagement of the researcher. So you have to be emotionally somewhat integrated, or like you have to feel somewhat for the fictional researcher of the game. So the story element is, of course, important. But for the development aspect, I think it was important that we developed it in a modular way, since we have multiple puzzles and everyone was responsible for one or several puzzles. So in that way, the puzzles could be exchanged with each other and also are somewhat independent from each other. So you could play the game in any order. Theoretically, we just group them together so it makes a bit more sense if you think about the research process. But technically, everyone can interchange the puzzles, and we could also, in that sense, update the puzzles later. So the modular way really helps to maintain the puzzle and keep it alive.
I have a quick follow-up question there. Roughly how long did it take for you all to get this off the ground? And how long do you think it would take if others were interested in implementing it at their university to, you know, work off the framework and a lot of the code that you guys have already produced?
So I think that I was originally contacted by Lena and Stephanie in September, probably. So, you know, not a ton of time, but it was very well organized. In the same way of it being modular, you know, we were able to divide up the different puzzles that we were doing amongst all of our collaborators and work on those asynchronously, and then have a few shared documents where we could sketch out ideas for the frame story and think about, of course, Meron did a lot of good work researching different tools that we could use and think about the easiest way to implement this given the time. But it came together rather quickly. I think this, you know, kind of goes with what Stephanie was saying earlier, that we had, you know, a good tone all working together. It was all very friendly, and I guess because of the subject also of this work, but also I think because in the context of the Netherlands, as somebody coming from the outside, I think that there's a lot of energy and possibility around these kinds of this kind of work. And it's also a country where there's a lot of research institutions in a relatively condensed area. So there's a lot of possibility for collaboration. So yeah, things like this can happen rather quickly, which is really nice.
I would say we had a deadline. We wanted to launch on the 31st because the 31st was Monday, like working day. We could have a launch event on the 31st. We could not miss it. And this gives you 2 months, which is sufficient to do this. Of course, you can spend way more time on making it perfect, right? That's the thing. So it's also good to have. I think it actually makes it an attractive project, because if I would now say, oh, guys, let's develop a cool game, it will take all the time you have left for the coming year, and nobody will might be interested. But if I say, you know, we will finish it within 2 months, then it becomes much more attractive.
So in the whole period of half of September till end of October in Halloween, we had basically an initial deadline where we wanted to have a somewhat working version for master's students, so we could test whether everything was understandable at the very least. So in the beginning, it went a bit slow. There was kind of just the brainstorming, getting to know what we want to do, what our options are. And then once we divided up, went into the modular part where everyone just thinks up a puzzle by themselves, things went very fast. Of course, we needed the storyline to be worked out a bit more as well, which was also a separate package where Dan worked on a lot, I think. So once all of that was done, we could kind of glue all the different puzzles together. And then both with the art part of designing, like adding nicer games, but also adding nicer effects, having a transition work in a better way. You can put as much time or as little time in it as you want. For me, oftentimes it became the more creative part. So often in the weekends, I figured, oh, this would be a fun, more juicy way to whatever, introduce the next stage. And then I just had to do that in the weekend because I wanted to do it at that moment. But you don't have to, you can have a quicker or a slower timeline depending on what you want.
Awesome. It's really great to hear all like what a positive experience it was, both developing it and, you know, the reception that the game's been getting. It sounds like it's a really cool project. So we're really glad you could come on and share it with us.
And it's amazing. You can tell how much joy you all had in creating it because we can feel it through the Zoom recording.
I can see the smiles and the thumbs up and the hearts. I know that none of our listeners can see it, but just know there's a lot of excitement going around the Zoom room right now. Well, thank you, Stephanie, Dan, Marin, and Lena for coming to talk to us on Idea about the software horror escape room. It was really interesting to hear about, and it's obvious that there was a lot of passion and excitement around the project, and we're really glad you could come on and share it with us and our listeners.
Thank you all for having us.
Thank you so much.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Idea.
You can find the resources from today's show in the show notes.
Our theme music is by Scott Holmes, and a big thanks to the Research Data Alliance Interest Group, Engaging Researchers with Data, for supporting our work.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate or review us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next time.